We begin the current daf himself. The ksuba is daf pei gimel. We begin the ninth perek. Perek akosav leishtoi. We begin on the top of the amud. The Mishnah opens up, continuing in the theme of the previous perek, discussing the specifics of the nichsei melug, which are certain properties that the wife brings into the new marriage, which are not evaluated and put into the ksuba. Rather, she retains the keren, and the husband from takan chachamim, he can utilize the peiris, the utility of that. Now, this perek discusses the continuation of the halachas of the ksuba and the requirements between the husband and wife relating to that. So the Mishnah opens up, HaKosev L'Ishtai. If a man writes to his wife, Din Udvarm Ein Li B'Nechsayich, I don't have any claims regarding your properties, which are regarding her Nechsei Melug, which he has certain rights, as we're going to see in the Mishnah, actually there's specifically three rights that he has in it. If he writes, I don't have any litigation regarding your properties, Hareza Eichel Peres B'Chayahu. So in spite of that, he does continue eating the produce when she's alive, meaning from her Nechsei Melug. Moreover, second of all, v'meis if she dies, Yersha, he inherits her. So then the question is, then what is the practical relevance for what he's saying that he doesn't have any rights regarding her properties if he continues having all the rights regarding Nechsei Melug, specifically regarding eating the peiros, and that if she dies, he inherits her? So the Mishnah says it's actually regarding the third component, she'emachar v'nos nekayim, that if she sells it or gives it away, it's valid. Because although generally there's halacha that a woman cannot do that, because if she sells her nechsei melug, the husband will be losing out the takanas chamah peiros, and therefore we didn't allow her to sell it. And if she sells it, he can go ahead and claim it from them. And that is what the Mishnah is telling us. It's just regarding that one out of the three halachas, that if he says, din udvarm ein li b'nechsayich, it's in regards to her ability to sell that she could sell now. The Gemara is going to explain why is it specifically for that halacha and not for the other two halachas. Now moving along. Let's say Kasab Lahi wrote to her, din udvarm ein li b'nechsayich ubeperisen. He re-added on the word. He said, not only don't I have any litigation regarding your properties, but also regarding your peiros. So then, you have the second component. So now, moreover, he cannot eat the produce when she's alive, because he said he doesn't have any rights to that. But if she dies, then he does inherit. Rabbi Hudamer, he says, that the truth is, although he said he's not going to have from the peiros, although he actually cannot have from the peiros, but he could eat from the peri peris, the derivative of the derivative, and the Gemara then explained exactly what is peri of peris, until he specifies even further detailing, that dinu dvarm ein li b'nechsayich ube perisein, and he adds, ube peri perisein ad oilam, not only will I not have any rights regarding your property, moreover regarding the peris of it, but also the peri peris, and for infinity. Now, moving along to the third case the Mishnah brings, Kasav Lo, if he writes to her, Din udvarm ein li b'nechsayich ubeperisein, I have no rights in your property, in your produce, and the produce of your produce. And here he adds on, b'chayich ubemaisach, when you're alive and when you're dead, then you have all three halachas. First of all, ein eichel peris b'chaya, he cannot eat the produce when she's alive, because he said peris. And obviously, as we mentioned before, from the first halacha of the Mishnah, if she gifts it or sells it to someone else, that's valid. But here we have the third halacha also, the emesa in the yarsha. If she dies, he doesn't inherit her because he says, not only doesn't he have her rights when she's alive, but even when she's dead. Now, actually, B'Shem Gamliel, he argues on this last halacha. He says, emesa yarshana. If she dies, he does inherit her. Although he says he has no rights even in regards to when she's dead, which is to inherit her. And the reason is, because this is a condition that's preempting what's written in the Torah. The reason is, as Rashi explains, because Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that the inheritance of the husband in his wife's property after she dies is a biblical halacha. And that is, as the Gemara Bava Basra of Kofiyot Alef Amud Beis brings, that he learns it out from a pasuk that says, although this is talking about inheritance regarding regular family members, which is patrilineal, it says in the pasuk, "L'she'eru ha'korav alav mimishpachto b'yorish oisa," that to the relative that's close to him from his family, he inherits it. Now, this word "v'yorish oisa," which in the pasuk is literally translated as "he inherits it," is superfluous and is coming to teach a drasha that a man inherits his wife. The Yarsh Aysa is a reference to Har. He inherits his wife because the Pasuk says She'eroi, which although literally for the simple translation it means a relative, She'er is also a reference to a person's wife. Now, although the literal translation of the Pasuk is not regarding a wife, because it says when the Satam es nachalosoi l'She'eroi, to his relative, which is obviously talking about to his relative, not to reference him inheriting his wife. However, that is learned out from a mishpachta. This that it says, a superfluous word of v'yarash oisa, they expounded over in the Gemara to teach us that who is v'yarash oisa, it's a reference to a man inheriting his wife. So, since Mishim Lil holds that it's a biblical halacha that a husband inherits his wife, here where he's specifying, detailing, preempting that halacha, so he's a masna mashakaza batar, v'chala masna mashakaza batar, t'nai batal, whoever makes a condition, voiding what's written in the Torah the other way, then his condition is nullified, and therefore it's like he didn't make that tonight, and he will inherit her. However, regarding the other conditions of eating the produce, or of her inability to be able to sell it, which is based on that halacha of him being able to eat the peres, because if she sells it, he's not going to be able to have peres to eat from, that's a rabbinic takana, and that he can make a condition on, because that's not masna mashakaz abatayra, it's only a condition regarding what the rabbis had done for him, but that he could preempt. Now, Tan Reb Chiya, he adds one point regarding the halacha of our Mishnah. He says that actually the way he learned this halacha was ha'imer le'ishtai, that if someone tells his wife all these halachas of din advarm ein le'benachsach, in other words, he didn't have the girsa of ha'kaisiv le'ishtai. And what he's teaching us is that even just with words, it's enough. You don't have to make an actual acquisition and a writing and a document. He holds that these halachas of helping him remove himself from his wife's estate, whether it's the selling, or it's the payrus, or even the inheritance, it's enough even verbally. Now the Gemara asks a general halacha, a general question on the halacha of our Mishnah. V'chi kasav lahachi, when he writes this as it's written in our Mishnah, this whole dinu dvarim, I have nothing to do with your estate. My hava, what does it help? And as Rashi points out, most definitely according to Reb Chiya's girsav, when you just say it verbally, how does that help to remove himself from what he has invested in the rights in her estate, in her nechse malug? But Vatani, Linda Bryce as follows. If someone tells his friend, for example, if let's say their partner is in the field, and one of the partners tells his other friend one of the following terminologies, whether he writes it or he says it, he says that dinu dvarm ainli asadazu. You know what? I have no litigation regarding this field. Or he writes, v'ainli asig, but I have nothing to do with this. Or he says, v'yadi misulekis amena, my hand is removed from this. So on that, the Braitzer says, Lo Amar Klum, he hasn't said anything. And the reason is because what he has said is not verbiage of gifting. He's an owner. So yes, he says, Din Dvarim, or whatever it is that he's saying, but that doesn't help. If that doesn't help, so the husband that has rights in this wife's Nechse Melog, what does it help by saying Din Dvarim? That doesn't remove him at all from it. So the Gemara answers that Ami Deber Reb Yanai, they said in the Shiva Reb Yanai, that you're right. Of course, somebody that this is his land and he's coming to give it to his friend, to his partner, his half of the field, of course you have to use the terminology of gifting. And that's why it doesn't help with saying that I have no ASIC or I'm removed, because that's not giving it, just removing yourself. However, our Mishnah is talking about b'kaisavla v'oida arusa. It's talking about that when did he write or tell her these words? It's talking about that when she was still engaged. And hence, he has not yet merited in her nechse melug, because that only happens at eats the pairs when they consummate the relationship with Nisu and not by Erison. And therefore, when he's making the condition, he has not yet merited. It only happens when they get married, and therefore you don't have to say it in a way of gifting, because he doesn't have it yet to have to give it to someone else. All he has to do is stop it from coming to him. As the Gemara says, Rav Kana, like Rav Kana says, Tam Rav Kana, like Rav Kana says, Nach lahabol la'odom mimokam achar. Regarding a heritage, an inheritance that is coming to somebody, to a person from somewhere else. In other words, not like by inheritance from one's fathers, where that's already on some level like it's already a person's. Rather, it's something that he did that's going to cause it to come to him. For example, like the case we're discussing, of when a person inherits his wife, which only comes, it's not something that's already coming to a person, it's only when he gets married that it comes to him. Now, since it's only because of rabbinic takana that it comes to him, and he's coming to forgive it, to say it's okay, I don't need it. So other masna lashla yershen, a person could make a condition that he shouldn't inherit it to stop it from ever coming. As the Gemara points this out a little bit further. Okay, the Rava, like Rava said, Dama Rava, that Rava says, Ha'aymer efshi betakans chacham. If someone says, I don't want this takanas chacham, this chachamim, what the sages had done to assist me, to make it better for me, I don't need their favors. Kugain zu, for example, like this case, where Zigma will shortly explain what case is referring to, then shoymelei, then we listen to him. So essentially, that's the same thing we're saying over here, where yes, if it's yours and then you want to give it to someone else, you have to say it in a gifting way. But here we're talking about that he's only engaged. He doesn't have it yet. He just wants to stop it. And since it's a takan chacham that he wants to just stop, that he could stop, like we find Rava who says that a chacham's takan that's coming to you, you could say, I don't need those favors. So the Gemara clarifies, Maika Goinzu, where did Rava say his halacha that we're borrowing it for our sugya? And then he said, for example, this, that we listen to the person. That is Kedravuna Marab. Like Ravuna said in the name of Rav, that it's in reference to the sustenance, the mezainis that the chacham were mesakin for a woman that her husband has to feed her in place of her maisi daim, her earnings that go to her husband. That the Ravuna Marab, that Ravuna said in the name of Rav, Yichayli Isha Shatayim Labala. A woman could tell her husband, look, Einin Noizenes Ve'Einin Oisa. I am not going to get fed from you, and therefore my earnings are not going to go to you. In other words, if she says, I don't want this takana that the chacham did for my benefit. And the reason is because chacham were concerned for the women. In other words, because many times what a woman's going to earn is not going to be enough to cover her basic needs of sustenance. So what they did was, is they made a simple transaction. They said they'll make the husband have to feed her, and then her earnings will go to her husband. So on that, a woman could say, I don't need that because I'm a very delicate woman and I don't want to have to work to pay back my husband for what he's feeding me. I'll find my own food. Or she makes a lot of money herself, more than what she's being fed from the husband. She says, I don't need that. My bank account is bigger. So she can do that. So now the Gemara is saying is that the husband could do the same thing with the Nichsimilug. He says, that taiva that Kans Chacham made for me that I get the payers, I don't need that. And that's why it's valid in the Mishnah of Din Advarm Ein Leben Nichsisach that it takes effect. Now, on that the Gemara asks, Ihachi, if that's the case, that the reason why he can do this and avoid himself from these payers is because it's his takans chacham, that they did it for his benefit, that he can get the payers of his wife, and therefore he could be meichel on that. So then the question is, why did the Gemara previously say from the Beir Bianai that it has to be talking about that when did he write and tell her these words when they were only engaged? And that the question of filin nesu'anami, then even if they're married, he should be able to. In other words, just like a woman, regarding her mezainis, is when she's married. She could just stop the mezainis, and then, because it's a takan schama for her benefit, so why does it have to be talking about when they were just engaged? Even that was because we thought it's because once you're married, then you have to gift it back. But we're not saying it's a gifting back, it's a takan schachamim. If it's a takan schachamim, so then you could just stop it from coming. So why is it only by arus and not by nesu'a? So Abai says that Nesua, when she's married to him, Yadoi ki yada, his hand is equal, he's an equal partner as her hand in her properties. So since we view her Nichsi Milug as it's his, so therefore, that part of his, which is the Peiris and the Yerusha, all these different things, if he wants to stop it from coming to him, it's not enough just to stop it because it's already his. The Chacham already gave it to him. Then he has to say it in the Lashon Matana, and therefore it's not going to be enough with a Lashon Din Advarim. In contrast to, let's say, a woman regarding her mezainis, the Rishonim explain, that's because it continuously comes every day anew, so she could just stop it. But here, his hand is equal to her hand, it's like he already has it already, therefore Din Advarim wouldn't be enough if they would be already married. Rava Amar, he says a slightly different version, he says, the reason why it won't help when they're already married is because Yodai Adif Miyada. His hand is actually stronger than her hand. In other words, although it's her property, Nechsimalug, the fact that he has the utility and he inherits it, all these different things, he actually has the upper hand in her own assets, and therefore, if he wants to stop it from coming, he can't just say Din Advam, he would have to say it in the Lashon HaMatana. Now, the Gemara explains actually this Machloikis Abai and Rava is only a nafkemina l'shemeris yavam, regarding the halacha of a woman anticipating Gibim. In other words, regarding this topic that we're discussing here in the Gemara of Din Udvarim, there they don't argue, because whether if Yada is ki Yada or Yada is better than Yada, it doesn't make a difference, because either way, as the Gemara just explained, it's not going to help for him just to say Din Udvarim to remove himself from her Nechsi Malug. Now, so what is the relevance then of this Machlekes and Bayer and Rava? It's regarding the topic of a Shemeres Yavam, which the Gemara in Yevamos expounds upon this Machlekes Abaye and Rava in Perek Achel, Staf Lama Tesem Alf, which is actually in relation, as the Gemara there discusses, regarding our mission that we had previously on the Peyam and Beis, which that halacha talks about a woman that's a Shemeres Yavam, that she inherits Nechazim in that twilight period of a Shemeres Yavam. So there, the Mishnah says that if she dies, so what do they do with all her different elements? Her ksuba, her nechsimulog, her nechsitzer and barzel. So on that is a machloikis between Beishame and Besil. Beishame say yachloiku, the Yersha Av split up with the Yersha Baal. And Besil says that no, regarding her nechsimulog, her Yershim, the Yersha Av, they take it because they're the muchzik in her nechsimulog. Now, over there, Masech Tzivamis, Abaye explains that this case of a Shemeres Yavam that has these properties that then she dies, what do we do with it? And that's a machlekes about Beisham Besil. That's talking about that she inherited this actually when her first husband was still alive. And Abaye holds, yada ki yada, the way our Gemara just quoted. Now, therefore, when he dies, her first husband, and she falls for Yibam in front of the Yavam, and then she dies before he got a chance to do Yibam, so her Yarshim and the Yersha Abam and the Yavam come to inherit her. So the Yersha'av come from the ability of their sister. The Yavam comes from the ability of his brother. So according to Beishamai, he holds that to split it is the better option. According to Beishil, he holds that no, the original Chazak is better. And therefore, her, for example, her Nechsi Milog was Becheskes Yersha'av because the principle was always hers. Now on that, Rava argues on the Abaye and he says that no, it can't be talking about that she inherited when she was married to her first husband. Because if that would be the case, then actually everybody would agree that the hand of the husband, as he quotes it over here, Yadi Shel Baal, is adif miyada, is actually stronger than his wife in her own nechse milog. And therefore, Rava says, if he would die, and then one of the brothers would be ready to do yibam and take the place of the husband that died, so then he's essentially just like his brother. And therefore, if the Shemeres Yavam dies at that point when she's a Shemeres Yavam, then actually her inheritors, what's called the Yersha Av, wouldn't get anything. And therefore, Rava says the Mishnah has to be talking about that actually she inherited when she was a Shemeres Yavam. And that's why Beisil would hold that the Muchzakis and the Nechsim Luk, for example, would be the Yersha Av. Because Rava says if she inherited when the first husband was still alive, then Yadoi Adifa Meyada. And therefore, then even her nechsi milug would go to the Yavam and not to the Yershei Ha'av. And that's the significance of this machlekes of Abaye and Rava. If you say yodei ki yoda, that it's only equal, or actually yodei adifa, and if you hold yodei adifa, as we explained, that's what Rava holds, he has to say that the machlekes b'sham b'sil of our previous Mishnah is talking about that the Shemeres Yavam inherited only as the Shemeres Yavam, not when she was first married to the first husband, not like Abaye, who says you could even be talking about such a case. Now the Gemara continues and says, Ibailuhu, that the following question, and this is going back on the Brysum, which we brought in regarding two partners in the field. And one of the partners says to the other partner, Dinu Devarim Ainli, I don't have anything, or one of these other phrases that he says. And on that the Brysum says that doesn't help because you own the other half. You have to gift it to him. You can't just remove yourself. So the Gemara had the following question. Kanu miyadai mahu, what would be the halacha if besides saying din advarim, they made an act that should solidify this, his being removed from the other half of the field? In other words, do we say that chalipin, which is one gives a kerchief to the other one, and by giving that kerchief, he then acquires the other person's object, which is called a kinna chalipin, do we say that has no halachic significance? And because the reason is it's only going on the din advarim ainli b'nachsayich, and because it's just you're doing an act to solidify. You said with words, and this is a kinyan that this should be what should be din advarim. Din advarim has no halachic relevance, and therefore, even though there was a kinyan done in it, there's no relevance, and therefore, it's like he didn't say anything, and he's not removing the other half. Or do you say that no, a kinyan chalipin could only be for something that has substance? Therefore, when this person acquires the kerchief, then he's acquiring to the other person the object that's being sold or that's being given as a gift. And therefore, it must be that the kinah chalipin is not going on the words that he said of din and dvarim, but rather it's going on the land that he's acquiring from him, and therefore it's considered like a full-fledged gift. That's the question, is it going on his words, and therefore it's not halachically recognized, or is it a chalipin has to be on something, and therefore it must be going on the land, and therefore it is significant. Now, however, as Rashi explains, that stands in contrast to our Mishnah, where a kinah chalipin wouldn't help her at all. And the reason is because when he says these words of din dvarim ein le b'nachsayich in the halacha of our Mishnah regarding the nichsim elug, that even without a lashon of matana, it does help him to remove himself from the actual land itself. And as we explained in the Gemara, because it's talking about when she's in Arusa and he doesn't have it yet. Now, so the reason, however, in our Mishnah, when it says that he still continues eating the peiros, even though he says he's removing himself from the nichsim elug, that's not because of the insignificance and the inability of it to be impacted by the words of din dvarim. That's just because he didn't specify what he's removing himself from. And as the Gemara will explain, we say yada ala tachtein, that she gets the lower hand, in other words, in interpreting what is he removing himself from, which is only the lowest thing, which is regarding her selling. And therefore, she can't say that you removed yourself from everything of my nechsim elug. And therefore, it wouldn't make a difference if they would make a kinah chalipin or not. So rather, Rashi explains that the Gemara's question is going on the Braisa, where we said that it's loyal maklum, and there the reason is because of the deficiency of the words of tinu dvarim, where because you're already a partner and then you have to gift it. So that's the question. If they made a kinyan, would that help or not? So it's actually machlekes. Rabbi Yosef, he says, midin udvarim konami yadai. What's the kinyan going on? It's going on what he had been saying. It's what kinyan chalipin is solidifying what you had made up. What did you make up? Din advarim. Din advarim is nothing, and therefore he gets nothing even with a kinyan chalipin. Whereas Rav Nachman, he argues, he says, no, magufa shel karka konami yadai. What is he acquiring with the kinyan chalipin that when he gives the kerchief, he's giving him something else? It can't go on din advarim because that's not anything of substance. It must be going on the land, and therefore it will work to give the other partner the other half of the land. So Abaye qualifies and he says, Mistabra Milsa de Rav Yosef, it makes sense that this halacha Rav Yosef, who said that even the kinyan chalipin is not going to help anything. So that is as we kinyan tamad beis, only ba'ir. If when the other partner now comes to say, yeah, you have nothing to do with this field, and they even do a kinyan, so when the other partner comes to take over the other half of the field, he quickly gets up and he's ma'ir. He starts protesting regarding the gift, and he says, no, I didn't give you the other half of the field. I just told you I'm not going to contend with you, din dvarim ainli, which means I'm not going to fight with you. But however, I didn't say I'm going to give it to you. So that's when he says, it makes sense that's what Rabbi Yisrael was saying, that the kinyan chalipin is not going to do anything for it. Because it's just going back on his words of din dvarim, which have no relevance. Aval bo'emid, but Abaye says, if let's say he let it stand for a day or two, and then after a day or two where the other partner took over his field, then he protests, then no, then megufa shel karka konami yadai. Then it must be that actually the kinyan chalipin was going on the land, and he did acquire it to him, and he did gift it to him through the kinyan chalipin. Now, it must be, however, that only now he changed his mind, because people told him, look, say that you never intended to gift it with the chalipin, and was just going to the farm, and therefore since you're changing your mind now, it's too late, you already gifted it with the kinyan chalipin. Now, Amar Amemar said that the hilchas of the halacha is migufa shel karka konami yadai, that it does help to do a kinyan chalipin even though they said din advarim, because it's going on the actual land itself. Now, on that, Amali Ravashi Amemar, Ravashi asked Amemar regarding this halacha that he just said, ba'iru oy ba'imit. Did you say that he can't retract, in other words, that it is considered that he gifted to him only if he waited, or even if he protests right away? So the question is, l'may nafkamin, what's the difference? Why should there be any difference? So that's as the Gemara had just said before, look at Rabbi Yosef. Look, Rabbi Yosef had differentiated because he said that if the person protests right away, then he won't be kaina. So are you saying that it's being kaina only because he waited, or even if he protests right away? So Amem responded, he says, loy shmili. I didn't hear that there should be any difference. Kalema, what he meant to say was, loy sphirli. I don't hold that there's any difference between if he's Aymid, or even if it's Ayur right away, and even if it's Ayur right away, it doesn't make a difference because, as the Gemara had brought Aman Daman, Aman Aleph, that it is considered and Gufa Shal Karka, and in Kinyan Chalipin will work in all situations. Now, the Gemara continues explaining the first halach of our Mishnah, the Mishnah said that when he says din advarim ein lebenachsayich, so he still continues eating the peiris and he still will inherit her when she dies. So the Mishnah asked, im kein lo makasam lo v'chulav, and why did he write her? What is the relevance of writing din advarim if he gets everything anyway? So that the Mishnah said that if she sells it, then it's going to be valid and he can't go to the lekech and say, oh, you, the chacham don't allow you to buy it and you have to give it back to me. For that, it's not relevant. Now on that, the Gemara asks, that since you said that with the terminology of din advarim, as we explained, the Gemara is talking about that they're only engaged where he doesn't have it yet, so din advarim helps for him to remove himself from the rights he has in her nechse milug. So the question is that why doesn't it help to remove him totally from her nechse milug? Only it only works for one of the three. But v'teimalei, she should tell him, mikol mili sligis nafshach, you removed yourself from everything. You said din advarim ein lebenachsayich. Why is it just for her that he can't stop her from selling it? He shouldn't get the payers anymore. If she dies, he shouldn't inherit it. So Amabai Abai explains that yad bal hashtar al tachtoina. There's a general rule that the owner of a document who's coming to collect from someone else has the lower hand. So whoever's coming to collect, whatever is specified that in the document, so that you could claim. But if, let's say, it's vague or ambiguous, the terminology in the document, so then we downgrade the collector, the creditor, to the lowest definitive meaning in that document. Now, therefore, over here where the husband comes regarding his takan chacham on his wife's property, there's three rights he has in the in the nechse milug. One is he gets to eat the pears. Two is that if she dies, he inherits her. Three, even if she sells it, her sale is void. Now, over here where she comes with a document that says, wait, you wrote din udvarim ein lebenachsayich, which is the terminology of you removing yourself from the rights of my nechse milug. So our Mishnah says he could claim that you're right. Of course, it's a terminology of removal. But I didn't remove myself totally, only from the least amount of what's my rights in here, which is your ability to sell it. But as long as you don't sell it, I can eat the peiris. And that's based on this halachic principle of, because it's not obvious that it's any more than what's necessarily the case. So the lowest denominator, which in this case is just her ability to sell, is what I removed myself from, not regarding the other two. Now on that, the Gemara asks, but how do we know that the lowest one is her ability to sell? Maybe he's removing himself, yes, from one of the three, and the lowest one, but maybe it's regards to his ability that he's removing himself from eating her peiris when she's alive, and maybe that's the lowest. And the reason being is because if she's going to be able to sell, then he totally loses the whole land itself, which he could have inherited the whole land if she would die when he's still alive. So maybe that the mecher should be batel, and he'll inherit her, and what's he removing himself? Maybe he's removing himself from the peiros. So Abaye Abaye says no. Because beitzina, a small gourd, which is a type of a vegetable, tav mikara, is better than a large gourd. In other words, when someone says to his friend, look, you could take the small gourd that's in my garden, or you could wait till it gets big and then take a big one. So on that, the maxim is that it's better to take a small one right away, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to be in 10 days. Maybe the whole thing's going to be wiped out. So too over here, it's better for the husband, it's more dear to him, to eat the produce, which is constant and is immediate, than from nullifying the sale, which is not an immediate benefit. It's only when she sells, and maybe she's never going to sell. And therefore, he'd rather remove himself from his rights to void the sale than from removing himself from the ability of eating peiros, which is an immediate gain. So the Gemara asks, okay, so he's not removing himself from peiros, but ve'emim miyerusha, maybe he's removing himself from his ability to be able to inherit her, which maybe that's the lowest of the three, because maybe she's not going to die before he dies. But maybe regarding sale, he's not going to remove his rights to void the sale, because if she's going to sell it, then he's going to lose everything, because then he can't inherit anymore because she sold it, and neither is he going to be able to eat the peiros, which he has right now. So maybe it's only from inheritance that he removed himself, but not from the ability to void the sale. On that, Amar Abaye says no, because misa shchicha, death is common. Mechira lo shchicha, sale is not common. And the reason being is because a woman doesn't want to sell things that she brought in from her father's household, which she inherited, which is dear to her. And therefore, v'chi mesalik inish nafshe. So when a person is going to come to remove himself from one of the three items, memilsud lo shchicha, he's going to remove himself from something that's not common, which is her ability to sell, because she's not going to sell. Memilsud lo shchicha, le mesalik inish nafshe. But something that does happen, which is death, which is his ability to inherit her when she dies, he's not going to remove himself from that ability. And that's why, since the lesser of the three is the sale, that's why we say that since it's ambiguous, the only thing she could claim when he says din advarim ein le b'nechsayich is that she only has the rights to sell, but doesn't remove himself from the other two things. Rav Ashi, he says a different source for this halacha. He says all you have to do is to be precise in the reading of what he had told her. He said din advarim ein le b'nechsayich, in your properties, in your nechsim elok. Now, that inference is v'loy b'peiroi sehen, but not in the derivative of your items, that he does have din advarim, so he didn't remove himself from the peiros, only from the properties themselves. Moreover, it's only when it's hers that he said he's removing himself from, because he says b'nechsayich, in your properties, v'loy la'achar misa, but not after death, because when she dies, it's not called her properties anymore, because she's dead. And therefore, regarding Yerusha, which is when she's dead, that he does have din advarim. So the only thing that's left is Mechira. That's Mechira that he said din advarim ein li b'nechsayich, that he removed himself from. But inferentially, we could say it doesn't refer to Peres, or it doesn't refer to Achar Misa, to that of Yerusha. Now, the Mishnah quoted to Behuda Omer that he said that although one could remove himself both from the ability to sell, which is the first case of the Mishnah, and also regarding the second case of the Mishnah from Peres, but he says, La'olam o'ichel peri peris, that although he removed himself from the derivative, he'll still have the derivative of the derivative until he writes, specifying that I'm not going to have not only the derivative, the peris, but even the peri peris ad olam for infinity. Now, turn around, we learn the braisa. Elohein peris for Elohein peri peris. What are considered the peris? And what are the peri peris of her nixim-a-look? So the braisa explains, Hechnisu lo'i karka v'asa peris. If she brought land in to the marriage, which are har nechsim elok, and they make fruit. Sahari and peris, those are the fruits. Mocha peris, velokim and karka, v'asa peris. However, if they then sell those peris, and they purchase land with that, and that land makes peris, harehin peris, so that's considered derivative of the derivative, and that's what Rabbi Huda was specifying, that although he removed himself from peris, but if he didn't specify peris too, then he could go ahead and have the peris of that peris, which is the equivalent of those peris, was the land they bought, and they could have the land, the peiros of that new land. Now, Ibailu had the following question. L'Rebbe Yehuda, according to Rebbe Yehuda, that the words he used in the Mishnah was that if he wants to remove himself for the peiros, he also has to say that not only am I removing myself from your properties and the peiros, but from peiros sein and ad oilam. So the Gemara has three different options how to understand Rebbe Yehuda's clause. Is it that peiros dafka? Is it that specifically the words that he has to use to remove himself not only from the peiros, but also peiros, is just that he has to add on peiros, and he really doesn't need to write ad oilam, and if he writes peiros sein ad oilam, and he doesn't write peiros, he has not removed himself from peiros. Oy dilma ad oilam dafka, or maybe a second option is that no, the primary words that he has to use is that is ad oilam, is for infinity. And actually, that he doesn't have to write ube peri peris sein. And actually, if he writes from peri peris and doesn't write ad oilam, he has not removed himself from, he has removed himself from peri peris because he wrote that, but if he doesn't write ad oilam, which is the primary, he has not removed himself from peri peris sein. Oidilmo, or the Gemara says, maybe tarvaya dafka. Maybe actually you really need both. Maybe it's not enough with either peri peris sein or ad oilam. Maybe you need both. So the Gemara explains, Imtim tzolayim peir peris dafka. If you say that the primary words are that he has to add on, not only am I removing himself from peris, but also peris persen. So at oilam lamali. So why did the Mishnah have to say, in the words of Rabbi Yehuda, that for infinity, if according to Rabbi Yehuda we're explaining, he doesn't really have to write that? So now the Gemara explains the understanding of this first option is hakamashmon. What the Mishnah was teaching us was that kivin the kasev la peir peris, since he writes. Since he's writing according to Behuda, not only Paris, but Peri Paris too, it's command the kasav la'ad oilam dami. It's like he wrote for infinity. In other words, what he's saying is, until he writes, but Paris, Paris saying, so that's like ad oilam. You don't have to go ahead and say, okay, Paris, Paris, and Paris, old, because you can't, the numbers will never end. And but that's the primary idea, is just to write Paris, Paris saying, but you don't have to write ad oilam. Second option was, v'imtim t'loima ad oilam dafka. And if you say that the primary words that he has to write is for infinity, so then the question is, so why did the Mishnah have to say that Rabbi Yehuda says you also have to specify the derivative of the derivative. Let the Mishnah just say that you should write Perisein ad Oilam, since that's the primary words, is ad Oilam, which that includes for infinity, which is Peris and Perisein and so on. So on that Hakamash Malon, no, what the Mishnah was teaching us was that Afagav the cost of love Peris, the reason why it specified Peris and ad Oilam, which we're saying according to the second option is the primary, was to say because even if the person writes Peris, E cost of lad oilam in. If he writes also the primary idea of ad oilam, then it's going to remove himself totally from all the pairs. Eloi, loi. But if he doesn't write ad oilam, then not. In other words, you're right. Of course, you don't have to write pairs per se, because the primary is ad oilam. But had we not written that, then we would have thought to say that if he writes pairs, then as the first option of the Gemara was, then we would have thought that's like as if he wrote ad oilam. That's why we have to say that even when you write per se, you still need to have ad oilam. And if you see like the third option in the Gemara, that no, you need both. You have to write per se and ad oilam. Well, then the question is tarti lama. Then actually, why do you need to write both words in the document? Why can't you just write either per se or ad oilam, which infinity seemingly would include per se too? So the Gemara explains, tzricha. The third option makes sense. You need both. The cost of love peripares, because if he would only write, I'm removing myself from your nechasim and the peris and the peris perisain, and the cost of lad oilam, and he wouldn't write forever. So havamin, I would have thought to say, peripares hu de loyachal. Yes, he's not going to have the derivative of the derivative. Of a period the peripares achal. But maybe he is going to be able to have the derivative of the derivative of the derivative. Which is you take the pairs of the first land, you sell it, you buy a new land, then you take the pairs of that land, you sell it, you buy a new land, and then they could have those pairs. Maybe that's why you need to have ad oilam also. And the ikas of ad oilam, and if you had infinity, but the ikas of ad pairs, and you didn't write that you're moving yourself also from the derivative of the derivative, havamino la oilam ad pairs koi. We would have thought to say that infinity is going on the original pairs. In other words, I'm not going to eat the peris of your nixim log forever. Not in this year, not in coming years, but I could eat the derivative of your derivative. That's why you needed peris to say that ad oilam is going on peris, meaning the continuity of derivatives of derivatives. That's ad oilam, that's for infinity, and also on the peris themselves. And therefore, you would need to have both. Now the Gemara says, the Gemara doesn't answer the question, but those are the three different options in Rabbi Huda, which is primary. Is it just peris sein, or is it just ad oilam, or is it actually that you need to have both? And the Gemara explained, according to both all three interpretations, why would the Mishnah have to say both peris sein and ad oilam? Now continuing on this theme, the Gemara says, Ibailu, that the following question. Let's say he wrote to her, I have no claims against your estate, your nixim log, and in the derivatives of derivatives. So then the question is, ma sheyechol peris? In such a case, could he eat the peris? In other words, he only said, I'm removing myself from the nechasim and the peris, but he didn't say anything about the peris. So the Gemara explains the question. Isn't me peris? So like nafshei, he removed himself from the ability of eating the peris, but me peris like nafshei, but he didn't remove himself from the peris. Maybe that no. If he's saying peri-peris, he's obviously removing himself from everything, inclusive of the peris themselves. So the Gemara says, Pshiti de mekol milis lak nafshe. Of course he removed himself from everything, including the peris themselves. As the Gemara says very logically, Diyam mi peri-peris lak nafshe. But if you say he only removed himself from the peri-peris, and mi peri-peris lak nafshe, but he didn't remove himself from the peris themselves, so then, kivin achlin la peris. If you're telling me that the wife's nechse milog, which is, let's say, this land, that is eating the peris, so peripares mehecha, where does it ever come to be that there are peripares that he's removing himself from if he's the one eating the peris? So the Gemara responds and says, no, that's not a raya. Well, the tamech, according to your line of reasoning, ha-detan, this that we learned in the Mishnah, that Rabbi Huda says, la'olam ho'oichel peripares v'chulu, he said that, arguing on the Tanakhama that says that if he says, I'm not having your nechasim and your peris, you're right, he's removed from the nechasim and from the peris, but not from peris sein, until he specifies that he's removing himself from peris sein, not oilam. But then your same logic could be asked over there. And that is, kivin de achlinu, and the girsa that many have is de achlesinu. Kivin de achlesinu le peris, since his wife is eating the peris, because he removed himself from the peris, according to everybody. So peris mehecha, where exactly is the husband going to have peris, that you're saying, according to Rabbi Huda, that he didn't remove himself. So, Ela b'dishayara. Obviously, he must be talking about where she didn't eat up everything. She left over some peiros, and those peiros made peiros. So that's why there could be such a case, according to Yehuda, where although he removed himself in peiros, but the peiros he didn't remove himself. So therefore the Gemara says, thus refuting your raya to answer up this question, here it's also talking about where some was left over. In other words, if he didn't eat up all the peiros, and he sold it, and with those peiros he bought land, and that land made peiros, on that peiros is what he's removing himself from, and not from the original peiros, and therefore the Gemara says it's not resolved. This question that regarding what would be the halacha of the peiros, and it's not so logical to say that if he's removing himself in the peiros, so must be he's not having the peiros, because if he's eating the peiros, then it wouldn't be peiros, not true, because it could be there's left over, as we have to say in the case of the Mishnah, where although he's not getting the peiros, he might get peiros, again, when the wife didn't totally consume all the peiros.